Hello and welcome to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. If you enjoy our podcasts, please tell your colleagues and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host again, Ian Lewins, one of the consultants in the Paediatric Emergency Medicine Department based in Derby. And we were going to have two guests today, but we've had some technical issues. So we were supposed to be joined by Dr. Rachel Pilling, who's a consultant paediatric ophthalmologist at Bradford, but unfortunately she can't make it. So I'm really pleased to be joined by Mr. Dan Wadsworth, who's a transformation manager at Teletracking International. Good afternoon, Dan. How are you?
Hello, good afternoon. Yes, not doing too bad. Trying to find some sort of new normal.
Yes, quite. And for those who don't know, that Pilling and Wadsworth sounds like a very upmarket estate agent. You're the two people behind the 15 seconds, 30 minutes project.
That's great, yes.
So I was having a look on the website recently about this, and I've wanted to have you guys on for quite some time. This all started with dirty washing, if I'm right.
Yeah, it's not where most kind of projects start, but this one did. So, as a homage to Rachel as well, so it all started with Rachel's daughter. But just before I dig into that, so many moons ago, me and Rachel worked together at Bradford Hospitals on quite a few large-scale change projects. Myself from an admin and clerical and kind of transformational background, and Rachel would make sure any of the changes were safe clinically. And so we'd worked really well together and we'd done some good stuff. And then we saw an application to apply for the Sir Peter Carr Award through NHS Improvement at the time. And it was looking for a manager and a clinician partnership. So I read that and I thought, I know two people who'd be up for that. That was myself and Rachel. So we came up with like lots of different ideas, and they wanted a clinician and manager partnership to launch some kind of project that would be able to spread across not just the hospital but the NHS, and it'd have some kind of clear outcomes at the end of it. So we came up with lots of ideas. They're a bit wishy-washy, to be honest. We're thinking we're never going to win this award. And Rachel came in one day when we're having our planning session, which normally consists of us taking our shoes and socks off and drinking tea on the floor with lots of pens and paper.
Yeah.
And Rachel was having a moan about her daughter. And she's, oh, Maddie, she just, every time, I ask her to clean a bedroom, and she's got clean clothes on the bed, she's got dirty clothes on the floor. And when she's asked to tidy the bedroom, all she does is just take all of the clothes and put them all back in the wash basket, clean and dirty. Rachel then does the washing, and then she's bringing out, she's thinking, I've just washed these jeans. I've just washed this top. And then so she went back up to Maddie and she just said, if you just spent 15 seconds hanging your clean clothes back up and putting the dirty clothes in the wash basket, you'd be saving her family, her dad and Maddie 30 minutes and more later on to be spending nice time as a family and watching TV. And it was like some light bulb moment went on when Rachel's telling me it, and we just said, that's the thing.
Yes.
That's the thing. And it happens in healthcare, up and down the country. People are doing what they think is right, and they're not purposely trying to annoy or sabotage anybody. Everybody comes to work trying to do a good job. But there's loads and loads of actions which people are doing which are having a negative impact on others further down the line. So we said, well, let's reverse it. Let's say spend 15 seconds on a task now to save somebody else 30 minutes later on. And in by doing so, we'll reduce frustration and increase joy in work.
Yeah. So you have your light bulb moment, and that's great. But how did you take that next? How did you take that further?
So we put it all into the application for the Sir Peter Carr Award, and we thought, well, we've submitted it now, and we waited and we waited and waited. And when we got notified that we'd been shortlisted into the final five out of about 200 applicants, which was amazing, we couldn't quite believe our luck. Because then we suddenly thought, oh, God, we're going to have to come up with a presentation now and actually think this through a bit more, which was all kind of good, because actually sometimes when things are, you know, overly planned, it can overcomplicate things. So it was nice to keep it kind of high level. So we went to the final interview, and we got to pick which slot of the interviews we would like, 1, 2, 3, or 5. So we thought, I know, we'll go for the number 5 because you'll be tired by then. Well, I heard 4 stories and we'll go in there with a bit of Yorkshire spirit and we'll blow the socks off. And it worked. We actually won the Sir Peter Carr Award, which was great. So we won a bit of a lump sum money, but they were really cautious that we invested that into our personal developments, which would also then invest, by investing in us, would be investing into the project. So we launched, officially launched 15 Seconds, 30 Minutes at Bradford Teaching Hospitals as an initial internal project with the backing of some learning from NHS.
Yeah. So what was kind of the response to the from the trust towards you guys sort of setting this up? Were they supportive?
Yeah, really supportive. We had to have an executive sponsor who was a cracking guy, John Holden, exec director for strategy and implementation. And we'd worked with him previously, and we actually practiced our presentation to him. Now, me and Rachel could get a little bit giddy, and we were kind of firing all sorts of information at him, and we only had 10 minutes for the presentation. So we took him through this whirlwind presentation, and his words after that were, abused, verbally abused by you guys. He says, maybe just slow it down a bit and get your pitch right. So that's some really good input there. And then once we won the award, the backing was fantastic. You know, we got the freedom from exec team to just run with it. And as long as it wasn't going to interfere in our day jobs and we found time to do it, then they were really supportive of us launching that.
So when you're sort of looking at projects, were you sort of looking at them yourselves as a pair, or did you sort of say to people within the trust, look, have a think about what things annoy you, what things that you can change? How did you sort of start it off?
Yeah, so we thought, well, the best thing to do would be to lead by example. So we said, you know, have a conversation between ourselves. What really annoys us? What do we find really frustrating in the day? And, you know, what do we have the power to make a difference of? So what can we make a difference, and how can we change those things that frustrate us? So we had a good think, and I came up with an idea of something that really frustrated me at the time, is that the amount of people who had out-of-date emails or contact information on their Outlook, such as their email signatures, wrong mobile numbers, or even worse, no mobile number or landline for you to reach out, which resulted in me then emailing and hoping to get a response, or having to ring somebody else to find their number. And you can, you know, so it's frustrations for me, and it's adding more frustrations for others. And we said, if you just spent 15 seconds updating your email signature to the right contact detail and the right email address, you know, how much joy would that bring? Because actually, you can just bring it up in Outlook and find anything. So we found, I actually had a quick look, and I, you know, the exec group were not exempt from these kind of things. And yeah. Chief nurse actually hadn't listed her mobile number on the email signature. Through no fault of our own, the process that you get set up on Outlook means that you have to do it yourself, you know, because at the time IT might not know what your number is. Mm. So we politely, you know, just messaged her, and she was, you know, she was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I need to get this sorted straight away. And I actually did a little piece to camera where she was explaining what she'd done. And so we published it in the local magazine, and we put it out there to say, you know, you can do this. It's something quick and small. And if you do it and it's a mission that you complete, we've got these little metal cogs that we put out as an appreciation. And you can start to wear that, and then that's going to encourage you to do another small task, and so on and so on. So we took like a bit of a data snap from when we first launched it to when we give it a couple of months, publicise it, hand out some cogs and make a bit of a fuss and song and dance about it. And people seemed to really respond well to it. And we had about 80% improvement of people who hadn't previously listed numbers on their email signatures, and then therefore reducing a lot of frustration and increasing some joy in work.
Yeah. So these are essentially lots of QI projects, aren't they, basically? Quality improvement projects.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. Now, when me and Rachel were doing it, you know, when we were doing the large-scale change projects before we won the award and launched 15 seconds, 30 minutes, we were doing a lot of work with admin staff, porters, cleaners. Now, from our experience, there's loads of quality improvement courses, you know, management degrees you can take in quality improvement, but they're all kind of aimed at senior people. We wanted something that was for the people on the ground doing the do, because they see 100% of the frustrations 100% of the time, and they're the best placed people to make the changes. So we wanted something that kind of, you know, allowed them to make those changes themselves. And by calling it 15 seconds, 30 minutes, it's not bogged down with the jargon and the, you know, the methodologies that come with PDSA cycles and, you know, all these different, you know, the psychology of change and the lens of profound knowledge, which are all very important things. We absolutely get that. But when you're trying to say that a porter can have the power to make some changes themselves, then we believe that this social movement enables that to happen.
Yeah. And is the key to this sort of being picked up by lots of people the fact that you're not sort of saying, this is, we want you to do a huge amount of work on a massive QI project. You're saying, actually, you can see where the problems are and you can tell us, is it the fact that they're small changes that captures people's imagination with this, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we first kind of started to launch it, me and Rachel would stand outside of Marks and Spencer's, which was based in the hospital concourse, because you see everybody there. Everybody goes to Marks and Spencer's, from the chief exec to the porters. And we just stood out there and just said, you know, do you have any frustrations in work? Well, of course, you know, I don't think one person passes by that said no. And then we said, what if we told you that you had the power to make a change of that and it was only going to take you 15 seconds? Well, first of all, they don't believe you. Yeah. But second of all, again, we start talking about it. We say, well, you can. There's lots of changes out there that do require large, large change management pieces to have full system-wide transformation. And we're not saying that shouldn't happen. But what we're saying is, imagine if lots of people started small, and the combination of those benevolent cycles of change happening could be hugely impactful on a large-scale change. So people felt it was doable. And it's also, it's quite vibrant. It's, you know, we've got our logo is a cogs with smiley faces in it, because we believe that everybody is a cog. And actually, if we don't all take over and look after each other and keep well-oiled, actually, you know, you do cause the bigger machine to stop. So it's something that's friendly, doable, and it seems, you know, it's accessible for anybody.
Yeah. So you mentioned the sort of the email signatures. What other examples have you got? There was one I didn't quite understand about dishwashers.
The dishwasher, yeah. The dishwasher was the somebody was making a sign for the dishwasher. That was just a simple one that somebody said, you know, we're tired all the time of coming in to find there are no cups or clean spoons or, you know, anything to make a cup of tea with. So she made quite a nice sign. She's actually listed on the website. And she's completed a sign that you can print out and put onto the dishwasher yourself, to kind of encourage people to, you know, make sure it's full or empty it every morning. Just a quick job. It might take, you know, okay, so we're called 15 seconds, 30 minutes, but if the task takes 30 seconds or a minute to do, you know, and it's going to save somebody an hour, we still think that that's worth doing. But a couple of kind of other examples, I think kind of more recently, a couple of IT guys have really taken on board the 15 seconds, 30 minutes, and they've been doing a lot of stuff, especially around COVID-19, where they've been adding COVID-19 buttons onto the hospital admin system, so you can just click the button and you can see all the patients that are currently in there with COVID-19 is positive, rather than having to find each individual ward,
right,
like that, which is quite nice. And then we saw a cracking 15-second mission where people were wearing or applying a printout of their faces and sticking it to their scrubs and masks, yeah, of the PPE gear. Again, something quite simple, but it's just interesting what sparked people to make those changes. You know, we've always had scrubs, we've always had IT. But it's the simplicity of the 15-second action, I think, that people think is doable. And it encourages more people to carry on.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, it's something that has grown sort of very organically within the hospital, and people can see, actually, this is simple things that I can do to make potentially big changes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, quality, we go back kind of to quality improvement. It's something that the NHS seems to be growing quite well at, and there seems to be more and more of it. And again, we wanted something that was simple that people could do. So once it started to spread around Bradford and really started to gather pace, and all it takes, you know, if you have a free pen, a badge, and a little cog at the end of it, it's amazing what people will do for those three things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's linked into that, like you said, it's something that's actionable and doable. And it wasn't until we actually did our interview for the Sir Peter Carr Award that one of the panellists, she said, oh, so what you're launching is a social movement then that can be applied up and down healthcare. And we kind of looked at each other and went, I guess so, yeah. You know, at that point, we hadn't really thought above or beyond Bradford.
Yeah.
And what really did help us kind of reach out to see if there was a wider, you know, kind of audience for this was Twitter. You know, that Twitter account has been fantastic in terms of helping spread. So all we did was start to share wider the successful missions that Bradford had done and encouraged other people to do it. And we also launched a workshop, 15 seconds, 30 minutes. Again, it was, you know, you can come to a workshop. It's going to be an hour. Within that workshop, you get the chance to identify from some frustrations. We reconnect staff to why they work in healthcare and encourage other people to do it. And then we've also launched a little mission pack. So we launched that on the website as well so that anybody could do it. And in true kind of social movement form, you know, we wanted it that it's free, accessible for anybody in the world that wants to do it. And slowly but surely then it started to spread. We've got some fantastic friends down south in Plymouth and Cornwall, Carrie Biddle and Gary Mudge. And they just picked it up and just launched it. I remember Gary just rang me one day. He's like, I've seen it. I love it. I've seen your workshop pack. He had a quick query. And he launched it the next day.
Right.
So that's
good. You so just thinking about the sort of you call them missions, these sort of QI projects. Do you keep a sort of central database of who's doing what at all, or is it sort of left up to people?
Yeah. So when we first started launching, so when me and Rachel were thinking about some of our own frustrations to launch as 15-second missions, our first task was, let's see if we can get 100 missions in 100 days. You know, if we can get that, that is going to be a nice repository. And I will, you know, bet good money that those frustrations are not in one hospital, that they're similar frustrations up and down the country. So then people can pick it up. So we've popped that on the website as well, so people can see kind of the top 100 missions, you know, and frustrations that anybody can do. And we've also got a YouTube channel as well, which we kind of list fun animated videos which show kind of quick missions.
And in terms of sort of once these missions are completed, if you like, do people revisit them, do you think, to sort of see actually has that, what we've implemented, has that change persisted? Has that change actually made the difference I wanted it to?
Yeah, and it's a funny thing because the important thing with this and what we experienced early on is that this isn't just a small action for somebody else. And that's partly what it is. But the main driver behind the whole of the social mission is joy in work. And joy in work is so important to us as it is for everybody. You know, the godfather of quality improvement, you know, Deming, his famous quote was that everybody is entitled to joy in work. Everybody should have that. And then we started to read up a little bit about this and because it can sound a bit fluffy. It can sound a bit, joy in work, really?
Yeah.
Actually, with joy in work comes better staff retention, better innovation, better NHS staff surveys, you know, and it starts to really spark, you know, better sickness rates and things like that. And people start to experience joy in work. And with that, we say, you know, the quality improvement's kind of got three cycles. There's cost improvement, doing it well, which is one element of it. There's the patient safety element, which is also, you know, very important. But there's doing it with a smile as well, which is our joy in work element. And we say you get joy in work right, the other two will follow. However, it really is difficult to measure. you know, you ask one person one day, how are they feeling? Are you experiencing more joy in work? It might be yes. You know, they might have run the neighbour's cat over on the way to work the next day and actually make a bad day. So, you know, it's really difficult to measure. However, we do have a joy questionnaire, which we fill out at the beginning of the mission. And then people can use that joy questionnaire maybe at several points over the next couple of months to kind of measure if people are starting to feel the joy in work. But the best way we measure it is we see more people smiling. People leave the workshop energized. And we always said it's going to be a true social movement once it moves itself. And so we post out a few tweets every now and again, but I can't tell you how much joy we get when people just pick us up and they tweet us off the back of, you know, back on their own accord and email us in, which is really nice. So people start to really feel it is a social movement now.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, the sort of the theme of joy runs throughout the whole website, and it seems the ethos of this movement. I mean, when you first sort of talk about joy, did you get some resistance? Because I'm sort of picturing a big burly West Yorkshireman trying to sell him joy at work.
Oh yes, we definitely got some of that. And it's a funny thing, isn't it? I think people, the NHS is a tough environment to work in now more than ever. And you can start suddenly talking around joy in work, and it can almost sound inappropriate. You know, you think, what is that? But actually, you start to unpack that. Some people call it enjoy work. You know, East London Trust down there, their mantra at the moment is, let's enjoy work. You know, joy. We like joy in work because it's the work bit, and we want people to realise that you can find joy inside. And then I think it's once you kind of, you unpack it a little bit, you know, to say that, we're not saying you need to come, you know, dancing into work, skipping with maracas. You know, that's just me and Rachel that do that. But we're saying that with a little bit of joy in work, think about how nicer that would be. Not just for you, you know, you're going to experience joy in work because you're doing good for other people. But if you encourage other people to do that, you know, your job's going to be easier because other people are going to be doing it for you. And you're all going to feel that. And you start to connect that cycle. You start to connect the cogs along, you know, how big an impact their actions are having. It starts to hit home.
Yeah. And if you were sort of take a very, very kind of hard-nosed financial view of this, and you'd say, well, it's all well and good that everyone's really happy. Can you demonstrate improvements in terms like, can you show that projects have saved money or improved staff retention or those sorts of things? Are you able to show that at all?
It's funny. So that was one of the questions we had again at the interview for the Sir Peter Carr Award, and we took a risky line and we said that's not what we're about. Now, if somebody could incidentally kind of prove or study a project where people are doing lots of 15-second missions and that incidentally saves a lot of money, fantastic. But we never wanted the driver to be financial with this. We wanted it to, first of all, be a platform for people to start actioning quality improvement at all levels up and down the NHS. We wanted it to be a fun social movement that spread across the whole of the NHS and wider, which has been great. And we wanted to just kind of celebrate what joy in work actually means. Maybe in the future, we'll start to look back at those 100 missions and, you know, start to link back and see if there has been any kind of financial impact. But for now, we really want to keep it as the joy in work element and really just encourage 15 seconds, 30 minutes. And again, when you start talking about the money aspect of it, if you start to then branch into these bigger projects, these bigger financial recovery, transformational pieces, which are, again, equally pivotal and important into stabilising the NHS again. But we want to make people just have the small missions.
Yeah. I guess I'm really interested to sort of see how you guys have managed to maintain momentum with this, because often the QI projects or similar projects often start very enthusiastically and people are really keen. And then after a month or so or a couple of months, they kind of fizzle out. How have you guys managed to sort of maintain momentum and allow this to grow?
Yeah, so I think it's We've written some blogs on ours, and we had a little think about this, and we think a big part of it has come back to the power of two. You know, having Rachel and myself as a really good pairing to be on this. You know, if you're going at it alone, it can seem very lonely, and we really encourage people to, you know, pair up for these quality improvement events. So it's helped us bounce off each other and keep the momentum going. We wrote several project plans, but there never was an end point for 15 seconds, 30 minutes, because we just said to ourselves, we'll know when it's ended. We'll know when it stops. You know, we'll feel it, but also the comments and the tweets and the emails will slow down. And obviously there has been absolute peaks and troughs on it, you know, especially when COVID started. It was very much a drop, because obviously our own work kind of continued with it. But I think it's just kind of keeping it fresh, keep applying to people, keep reaching out to people. So we knew once we started to be picked up across the whole of the UK, we mapped out our map of joy, which had about 70, I think we're over 100 organisations up and down the country now, which is great. But like you said, you're in there, and then what do you do? So it was reaching out to other kind of people. So Helen Bevan's work with the NHS Horizons and the change agents has been really important, so that we're in their syllabus, in their change agent programme, so people can start to get that. The lady from Bradford Uni rang me up and she'd seen it, because obviously they work quite closely in conjunction with Bradford Hospitals. And she's wanting to add us into the syllabus for the Masters in Leadership and Improvement in Healthcare, which is fantastic again, because it's going to, you know, shape up a lot of people into 15 seconds, 30 minutes. And it's just getting it in into that kind of mindset, really. Yeah. And again, Twitter. And we keep posting out some fresh tweets. We keep retweeting some other tweets, and people seem to be loving it. And asking our heroes. So once you've launched a mission, you become a 15-second hero. You can be featured on the website in our Hall of Heroes.
Yeah.
Again, that sparks other enjoyment, because people are excited to showcase that they've been listed on a website. They start to then introduce 15 seconds, 30 minutes to their friends, families, colleagues, themselves. And sometimes we ask people to write guest blogs for us. So it just keeps it ticking over nicely, really.
Yeah. So if somebody listening to this thinks, actually, this my organisation could really benefit from this, where do they go to sort of look for tips and advice and these the PowerPoints and stuff that you guys have put together? Where's the best place for them to look?
So I think, first of all, the website is probably the best site to initially go at, which is www.15s30m.co.uk. But what we've just launched at the moment is, if you email into info@15s30m.co.uk, we have set up an automatic bounce back, so you'll get our starter pack for free, so you won't have to wait for a response from me and Rachel. We've preloaded it and set it up, and in that starter pack it'll take you through a bit of a detailed section of kind of what you do from the start to the end. Are you wanting to do this for yourself or for somebody else? And in all those links you've got the mission pack if you just want to go and launch it, or we direct you to the workshops. And then we've got the links to the TEDx video as well. So I'd definitely say email in, get the starter pack, and start exploring the website.
Fantastic. Dan, that's brilliant and really sort of inspiring to talk to you. So thank you so much for your time. So for people to look on Twitter, it's 15 seconds, 30 minutes. Just Google that and we'll find everything that we need.
Yep, that's it. Yep, on Twitter, just at 15s30m, and you'll see us there. But yeah, definitely do follow us on Twitter if you're on there or on there. We'll be posting some exciting tweets and lots of different things. In fact, we've just updated the website, so we'll be posting about their updates soon.
Brilliant. So again, Dan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Don't Forget the Bubbles. Remember, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for listening.